Hello and welcome to the Hornets and Heartbreak podcast. My name is Mark Bernacki and I'm here with my co-host, Tim Rogers. What's up, Tim?
What do you do, look at Mark?
I'm doing pretty well, man. So, Tim, we have big news again on the podcast this week. Terry Rozier, scary Terry, is the player of the week, the Eastern Conference player of the week, after averaging 24.3 points, 5.3 rebounds, and most importantly, 5.5 assists over the past week. He led the Hornets to a 3-1 record, including a win against the Heat and a close loss to the Suns since our last episode. With LaMelo out and Gordy disappearing a bit since the All-Star break, it's really been Terry's show. Big shout out to Terry.
Big shout out to Terry Rozier. What a guy. What a guy. Should have been his second Eastern Conference player of the week, but we'll let it slide because Charlotte native Sadiq Bey robbed him.
That other one. Yeah. He had like a stretch where he averaged like 30-something points per game for a week. And like, now let's give it to Sadiq Bey, who had 5 threes in a game. That shit was wild. Dude, if Terry's contract were up this season, how much money do you think he'd get?
I would say minimum 4 years, 80.
He's getting more than that. Come on.
Yeah, that's why I said minimum.
Yeah. You have to get as much as Gordy at least, right?
I don't know. I'd have to look. I mean, I guess it depends on the market. So what, Kawhi is going to be the biggest free agent. We don't know what he's going to do. Then it's guys like Kyle Lowry, Andre Drummond, Malik Monk. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he eclipsed over $100 million. I hope he does.
Yeah, one more year on his contract, though, just to be clear.
Yeah, luckily. One more year. Which I should say, I think Kevin Pelton from ESPN, who I do love, I think at the time gave that contract a D- when it was signed.
And now what do you give it, Tim?
A++.
When we signed him, me and you both were pretty like despondent. It was like losing Kemba and getting Terry was not, you know, we've mentioned this before on the podcast. This was not a very exciting move, not a very exciting time in Hornets history, but it's turned out extremely well. You know, last season he was pretty good, probably better than expected. And then this season he's been really good. It's been awesome to watch. About like halfway through the season when we did our Horny Awards, 30 games in, we gave Gordon Hayward the MVP. You wanted to give it to Terry. I kind of didn't let you. We gave it to Gordon Hayward, which I think was the right move at the time. Like he was doing really well then. But since then, Gordy's gone down, like I said, and Terry started to play even better. Specifically, his clutch numbers are just ridiculous. And yeah, if we had to redo those awards today, I would give it to Terry considering like the past 20 games.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone called me out in the comments too. And they was like, oh yeah, I remember one of you guys was saying they should have get it. And then, you know, you backed out of it. And I was just like, I am such a fucking coward. I was like, I should have just stuck with it. And now one thing about this week that I love, you know, I just randomly got like a notification. It's like, oh, Terry Rozier, Eastern Conference Player of the Week. And I was like, oh shit, man, that's really cool. And I was like, you know, like, I guess the nicest thing I could say is like, I don't even think it was really a standout week for Terry. Like, I mean, I think he has been very good, but it really just speaks to how consistent he has been. And, you know, just even more than scoring. I think that Miami game, what, he had 11 assists. Mm-hmm. He had 10 rebounds last night. He had 10 rebounds.
Oh, shit. I didn't notice that. His 11 assists against Miami was his first double-double of the year. He got a second one the night after that.
There we go. Just racking it up. Yeah, Terry has been, I would say, our best player this year, as we were saying. It's been an absolute pleasure to watch. And, you know, he's not like a boring player. He's a great talent. Like, you know, he has a loud 24 points.
Yeah, for sure. Also, with LaMelo out, I think that the fact that he's getting those assists is worth noting. Like, you know, we've kind of praised him for just embracing the shooting guard role this year and like not trying to do too much, just kind of like going out there and getting buckets. But he's kind of showing that when he needs to, he can distribute the ball a little bit more. And I think that's admirable for sure. Gordon Hayward, as we mentioned, has not been very good recently. He is averaging 14 points per game on 41% from the field since the All-Star break over the past 10 games. He's been specifically like kind of bad the past two games against Miami, 4 for 12, then 4 for 15 against the Suns. And it's interesting because he's shooting the ball like pretty much the exact same percentage from three. So what that means is like an 8% drop off isn't coming entirely from 2-point range. So he's just like not hitting his mid range shots anymore. I mean, yeah, it makes you wonder, like, should he just stop shooting that shit? Like,
nah, he can't go away from it. He'll get hot. He'll get hot in 2 weeks. I mean, maybe him and Devontae Graham have just been practicing twos together.
He's referencing Devontae's bad 2-point percentage for listeners who don't understand that joke.
Yes, the 36.9% from two, I believe Devontae is carrying around his neck. But yeah, man, it's been weird. Gordy, it's in the same way that, you know, Terry can casually just throw up like the 24 points and you're like, oh yeah, that was a good week for Terry. Gordon can just average 12 points and you don't even notice him because he's so goddamn boring.
Yeah. He hits shots that are just like what you think of when you think of like a classic, just like old dude shooting the ball. Like he spins one way and then goes back the other way and then goes back the other way and shoots like a minor fadeaway shot. And like, it's not exciting at all. And it doesn't even go in that often. So yeah. And like sometimes it doesn't feel like it's exactly like in the pace of play also. Like it doesn't feel like it like fits with what the rest of the team's doing. It's just like Gordy's going to do his thing like seven times a game. He's going to take some like shot that he just kind of like wants to take.
Yeah, he just swallows a possession.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of old man, our buddy Isaac, who we reference pretty often on this podcast, just sent us at like 11 o'clock in the morning. He was like, yo, it's crazy, man. I was watching John Havlicek highlights and John Havlicek and Gordy seem to have pretty much the same game. And I was like, that's a pretty hot take. I watched 8 minutes of John Havlicek highlights. And I was like, shit. If Gordy got drafted in 1964, he'd be a Hall of Famer. Yeah, their shot does look very similar. He's if John Havlicek played AAU basketball. I think that's a pretty hilarious. High compliment.
Yeah, yeah. Comparing eras is always tough. But yeah, hopefully he picks it back up. I had, you know, my neighbor Mike, who we also bring up often on this podcast, he texted me like, do you think like Gordon Hayward's hurt or something? Cause it seems like he's been off. I would say that no, I think just like the start of the season for Gordy was super hot. And like, that just was never going to be sustainable. He was averaging 23 points per game through 23 games this season. So like that was a wild hot start. Now he's down to like 19 and a half points per game. And somewhere around there is what we can expect from him moving forward. I don't think it was ever going to be a 24 points per game kind of year for Gordy.
Yeah. But, you know, all this being said, as soon as Gordy has a 5-game stretch where he averages 27, we are absolutely rubbing all the offseason slander back in people's faces. No doubt. So.
That's true. Also, though, a lot of people like said that his contract wasn't a bad contract. Like they rushed to say that, you know, after yeah. after like he was balling out in the beginning of the season. Like we had the delusional Hornets fan take of the week. We brought that segment in originally when people were saying Gordon's contract, like people who say that Gordon's contract is bad or stupid. Like he's balling out. Clearly, he's worth $30 million a year. Like, all right, no, he's not. You know, like I'm not saying I'm disappointed that he's on our team, but he's still overpaid. Like, I mean, there's no denying that he makes the most money on our team and he should not make the most money on our team. And if you compare him to other people making $30 million a year, it doesn't look great. It's also worth mentioning that he will be what, 33, 34 by the end of his contract. Like,
yeah, I believe it'll be 34.
It's not like we can reasonably project it to get better. Like it's, you know what I mean? I mean, yeah, sorry to be so negative, but I mean, I don't think that his contract is worth it, like just based off of this sample size. We can wait and hold off on judgment on that.
Yeah, I think where it should always come down to is the production. Would you know, like, I feel like it was pretty clear right away, even unless he averaged like 28 a game, the production would not be worth the contract. But it's you know, cheesy and easy to say, but I mean, what he's done as far as establishing just like, you know, he's a vet, you know, it was clear right away. LaMelo wasn't just going to, you know, do what he did in Australia. He's someone who obviously, you know, our players respect a lot when things do get like, you know, for hashtag Hornets culture. I think it actually is worth it, and to signal to other players in the league, we're not like a joke fucking franchise. I think that does. So like overall, I think you can talk me into the contract being worth it. But yeah, I mean, the people that were, you know, chastising analysts for mocking the deal, I don't think that was fair.
I can't believe you're gonna say that it was a good contract, Tim. That's very off-brand, bro.
Oh, you know, now that you say it out loud to me, it's not a good contract.
Okay, all right, cool. All
right, you were taking my negative angle. I was like, damn, man, is this what I sound like all the time?
Nah, like, my bad. I mean, I just feel like we can't like overreact to Gordon Hayward balling out on like a 20 game sample size. That's just my point, is that you gotta wait longer for a 4-year fucking deal.
I'll say this. I'm far more surprised when Gordy has the stretch of 25 point games more so than the last 3 games. Put it like that. That's not a little negative.
That was a little negative. Let's move on to something positive, Tim. The Monk Gasm in Miami. 32 points, except it was in Charlotte, but against Miami. He had 32 points. He had like 25 or something in the first half. Good reporting by me there. I don't remember exactly how many points he had, but it was 20 something. And he was like on pace to get 50 at some point. Pretty much single-handedly won that game for us by balling out in the first half. Tim, what were your emotions like during that game? And what do you think of that game overall?
I mean, yeah, I can't say I'm surprised, but it is weird. I think Monk shoots like, I think he's a career 33.3% shooter overall. He shoots like 41% from three against the Heat and like 39% against the Bucks. Those are just two teams he always seems to have good games against. And, you know, honestly, I love it. I love just he was really feeling himself with some of those threes, the step back. I think it was against Hero where, you know, he hit like the long, like 20 footer. And, you know, you got to love the stat line of 32 points, 2 rebounds, 0 assists. Like in a perfect world, Monk would have 15 assists, but something about that is more appealing to me. This is the 0 assists. He was out there to get buckets and he did it. And, you know, in the past, Monk, when he has these good games, you know, we're still, it's kind of getting our ass kicked. But now it's like, it's actually, he's like a positive player when on the court. His net rating is going up, seems like every week. He's actually making solid plays. If anything, his passes, a lot of his turnovers lead to, you know, just like trying to force a pass. But for the most part, man, yeah, he's a microwave scorer and it's one of the only positives from LaMelo getting hurt.
Is that, yeah, Monk and Devontae Graham also can get increased playing time and increased opportunity to score. Graham had 30 points against Phoenix, even though we lost, he almost single-handedly won the game for us. And we talked last week about like those two players kind of compared to each other, because the Hornets likely will only be able to re-sign one of them this offseason. Me and you both agree that like if we had to choose between the two, we should re-sign Malik Monk. It'd be awesome if we could re-sign both. I want to point out, dude, that the LaMelo injury is kind of like bad for us in two different ways. One, LaMelo's out and that's not fun. And then two, it's also driving the price up on Malik Monk and Devontae Graham, because they're both going to have nights like this for the next few weeks. Same with like other players on our team, but these two specifically, it feels like their role will increase. And then that's going to drive the price up for both those players this offseason. And that's not great. That's not great for us.
No. Long term, that is probably going to bite us in the ass. I still wonder what team out there is looking at Malik Monk as someone to be like their third or fourth piece, you know, as far as teams that actually have cap space. One thing I was looking up, you know, after we were talking about it last week, you know, it was like cap hold. So I think we have $21 million in space this offseason. And due to Monk's high draft pick, and, you know, since he's in his going into his, you know, restricted free agency, he has a $16 million cap hold, which means, you know, that kind of limits us unless, you know, if we sign him to a $12 million deal, that's what it goes to. But until then, until like we renounce his rights, It's going to eat up a big chunk of our cap space. So look in the offseason for us to get a deal done with Malik sooner rather than later. And the further on it goes, the less likely we are to keep Monk.
That's a dark, dark thought there, Tim. Well, it's a good thing we got his replacement in. Brad Wanamaker had his big debut for the Hornets with 0 points, zero assists, zero rebounds, zero steals, zero blocks, but also one turnover and one foul in 4 minutes. Hornets were also -7 in those 4 minutes. Brad Wanamaker, not sure what else to say.
No, I think you just perfectly summarized the Brad Wanamaker experience.
Cool. All right. One last thing I wanted to talk about. Cody Zeller, dude, hasn't been starting for us for some reason in the past like three games. Instead, Bismack has been starting and his minutes have been going down. He has just played like 11 minutes in that game against Phoenix. And I want to say 13 the game before. And yeah, just strange that he's not playing so much. Also, we had our first ever Patreon Zoom meeting on Friday, and one of our Patreon supporters, TC, pointed out that we rarely ever talk negatively about Cody Zeller. And he was like, you know, that was one person you guys should like probably talk about a little bit more, because me and Tim are always just like, oh, Cody's out there passing the ball. Like, we pretty much only say positive things about Cody Zeller, but he definitely leaves a lot to be desired. We just don't really talk about it because it seems so obvious, but Cody Zeller is like definitely not a starting center in the NBA at this point. Like, he's not a starting level center. Want to make that clear. We basically just don't talk shit about him because he's better than Biombo. So like, Zeller is the better alternative, but yeah, we definitely both agree that Zeller is not like a good starting center in the NBA.
Yeah. Zeller also might be the most boring player in the NBA. If you guys notice, I mean, we don't really talk about our center situation. It's pretty clear that they both suck. And yeah, I guess one thing I would say about Cody Zeller, if you guys want some slander, I think Cody Zeller leads the NBA in time spent dribbling away from the basket. He loves to catch it at the elbow, dribble to like the 3-point line and hand it off. Just like, man, what a great way to waste 4 seconds in a possession.
Interesting.
So, Cody's got that going for him. And it's weird. I mean, he just seems like a guy that if you're going to play him, he obviously would play better with starters. And like, you know, he needs a creator out there, needs a shooter that he can pass it off to for him to actually, you know, thrive and do what he does best. So playing him on the second unit doesn't make a ton of sense, especially, you know, with LaMelo out, you know, less guards there. Yeah, it's Cody Zeller. I'm talking right now and I'm still bored.
Yeah, we're going to spend like 2 minutes on him and then move on because there's just not that much to talk about. I just think it's odd that Biombo's starting over him, but it is what it is. There's one more thing I was going to say. All right, let's move on to Hopeless Hornets trivia.
All right, Mark, I'll let you go first.
All right, dude. So this player had a 10-year career in the NBA, but despite having 10 chances, he never averaged more than 7.5 points per game. He only has shot 3 3-pointers in his entire career. And in the 13-14 season, this player played in 77 games for us, but somehow only had 8 assists all season. Earlier this season, he was ranked by 538's Raptor rankings as the worst player in the NBA. Tim, who is this Hornets player?
Oh, 13-14, 8 assists. I'm trying to think. Was
77
that
77 games?
I mean, it's not Biz, right?
It is.
Dude, that's a crazy fucking... That's real?
That's real, yes.
Oh my God, that's pretty
fucking
impressive. Yes,
he's still playing for us, dude. Bismack Biyombo is still playing for the Hornets. James Borrego, I said this last week. Bro, if you're out there, please stop playing Bismack so many minutes. He should not be in our starting lineup. Insert Cody Zeller in the starting lineup. Play PJ Washington at the 5 more. That's what we need to do, bro. He's not been good for 10 years, let's stop playing in minutes.
It is pretty wild to see. He had one good year out of the whole time he's been in the league, and it wasn't with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that damn, man. You know, Nick Richards is taking notes on those 8 assists. Like,
damn. 77 games, 8 assists, bro. That was the year we made to the playoffs with Al Jefferson. The last Bobcat season, I guess.
Our boy Cody Zeller's rookie year. For me, I also am going with, I'll give you a little sneak peek. It's a big man. He was an undrafted free agent that went on to be a 2-time All-Star.
Wow.
Yeah. in stark contrast with Bismack Biyombo. In 2005-2006, he led all centers in assists with 4.7 per game. You know, to give you an idea, Ben Wallace was second place that season with 1.9.
Wow.
And he's also the king of the headband.
Did he play for us in that year? What was it? What years did he play for us?
He played for us for the 1990, 2000, and 2000, 2001 season.
Wait, you said 1990?
Or 99. Okay. The 99 and then the 2000 season.
I don't know.
Brad Miller, the killer.
Ooh, okay.
The boy.
All right, Tim, who you got for delusional Hornets take of the week?
I'm going to go with the drama from yesterday's game with our, a lot of fans just chastising the refs and just freaking out about how bad the refereeing is. One thing you won't hear in this podcast is us complaining about the refs. I mean, I feel like, if you have a set of bad refs at a game, it kind of goes both ways against the team. And a lot of people were complaining about the goaltending call and the Miles Davis, the Miles Bridges non-and-one alley-oop. But, I think the goaltend that late in the game, I don't think you can make that call. And I don't think it was a goaltend. I think it was pretty clearly outside the cylinder and, over the rim. And the Miles Bridges alley-oop, refs have been calling that all year the same way. I think that's like a consistent call. It might be like a stupid, rule. And maybe they should change that because I think it is dangerous to just be able to, harass guys going up for alley-oops. But it is the letter of the law and it's been called that way. I don't think the refs impacted that game. And that Phoenix game, you should look at it, as far as net rating goes, they're the second best team in the league. Behind the Utah Jazz, they're a legit title contender. And, without Malik Monk and LaMelo Ball, we took them into overtime. I think there's a lot of good things to take away from that game. And if your only takeaway was the refs screwed us, then you missed a really exciting, promising game where our young guys played well.
Yeah, now that was one of the most fun games of the year. Like, I texted you, if we had won, we would have done an emergency podcast. Like, that game was sick. And I think the refs, did suck a little bit. And I'm not going to say that very often. I thought that they were making some whack calls there at the end. But that being said, I don't really care. It's just one game. We'll be all right. It was just one regular season NBA game. And Devontae made that game closer than it ever should have been. Devontae yes. Single-handedly almost, won that game for us. That was sick. If we had won the game, obviously it would have been cool. But another one though, is that people are saying like Hornets fans and Hornets media, Hornets people are saying Brad Wanamaker could make contributions to this team. Why that was a good move for the Hornets. Get the fuck out of here with that shit, dude. Brad Wanamaker is not a good trade for the Hornets to have made at the deadline. Unless you like cash, unless we're happy about getting the cash. That's the only way that was a good trade. There had to have been better guards to pick up. And people talking themselves into a 21% from three shooter. The one play he had of note in that game was he drove to the basket, had a wide open layup because nobody was defending him. And then he passed it out to the 3-point line. So not a good impression of Brad Wanamaker early on. We have canceled the Martin Twin Slander segment, apparently. So I just wanted to get that in there.
Yeah. Why don't you watch your tone when you're talking about a 2-time MVP?
Yeah, Tim, before we move on to the listener questions, do you have any Martin Twin Slander for us?
No, actually, I got a text. I had just left work. I work at a car wash, and my buddy texted me 20 minutes after and was like, yo, one of the Martin Twins is here. I was like, word, which one? He's like, I have no fucking idea. He's like, but he tipped $20, seemed like a really cool guy. So I'm, once again, the Martin Twins are just winning me over little by little. I should say Cody Martin is winning me over. I like to assume that Cody threw him the 20.
Dude, I miss the old Tim. Listeners, let us know. Should Tim switch his opinions back to the old ways? I personally prefer the old Tim. Tim's getting soft as we go through this podcast. Episode 23, Tim is a changed man. I don't like it.
Yeah, episode 3, Tim would be very upset with this lackluster.
That's a fact. All right. Listener questions. All of these either come from our email, hornetsandheartbreak@gmail.com, or our Twitter and Instagram pages. The username for both of those is at Hornets Podcast. All right. Question from unapologetic Hornets fan on Twitter. What's the biggest concern overall for the playoff push?
I think that it would be, you know, something we saw yesterday with PJ Washington playing 44 minutes, even though he had a calf strain or a calf issue going into the game. I'm happy to see him get run. I would prefer it to be around 34 minutes and maybe play Cody Zeller a little bit, even though I do like PJ at the five. But yeah, it's like, you know, you don't want to run these guys into the ground. Everyone always says, oh, but you know, LaMelo's 19. Why can't he play 40 minutes a game? It's like, you know, it's hard to play in the NBA, man. That's a lot of wear and tear. You don't want to run these guys into the ground, and you don't want to inflate expectations, you know, going into the offseason like that. That's the real downside of the playoff push, along with, you know, also hurting our draft stock.
All right. Mine was that similar is that, like, if any of our guards get hurt, we're pretty screwed. Because that means more Martin twin minutes, and that's not good, right, Tim? Martin?
No, I mean, I can agree with that. Yeah. I can agree with that. We don't want that.
All right, cool. I'm swaying you gradually throughout the podcast. All right. Zero Sum Hoops asks, will LaMelo still win Rookie of the Year, or will there be no justice?
I think right now his biggest threat would be Tyrese Halliburton, our arch nemesis. Because, you know, you look at Anthony Edwards and, you know, he started off the season in a brutal slump, we'll say, shooting 48% true shooting overall, which is just like 10% below league average, which is the inverse of Steph Curry's MVP year, essentially, as far as efficiency goes. And then he's come on hot, right? You know, he had the 40-point game. You know, he's been putting up a bunch of 25-point games, looking like a stud. And his true shooting in that stretch is 49%, and he's still on the worst team in the league. So I would, if I had to bet on it, I would say LaMelo still has like a 60% chance to win Rookie of the Year.
That's high. That's high. I don't know about that. I gotta trust my boys over at Vegas on this one, and they're giving him a second shot to Anthony Edwards. It's a big question of, like, who's voting on Rookie of the Year, Tim? Is it the nerds that are looking at true shooting percentage, or is it people that don't know what that means? Because if they don't know what that means, then Anthony Edwards has a much better case. I'm with you, though. I'm with you that, like, Anthony Edwards, wildly inefficient. But also, like, the counting stats stuff matters. I don't know. I would put Edwards' case right now ahead of Halliburton's. I'm not saying, like, he's had a better season or anything, but I would say, like, in terms of a Rookie of the Year, like, giving it to Halliburton would be kind of whack.
I don't know. The Edwards case is tough just because they're so bad. I mean, they're so terrible. And, you know, since Halliburton has been inserted into the starting lineup, I think the Kings are like 4-1. You know, small sample size alert there. And, you know, his numbers aren't as gaudy. But I don't know. I mean, that's just that. Those are the two guys that catch my eye.
I think that, yeah, LaMelo has to come back, I think, to win it, though. I don't think he can get it by just sitting out the rest of the season. I think you would have to play, like, at least, like, the last five games of the season or something.
Yeah, which, you know, is not out of the question. It also depends on what the guys do. If Edwards, his last month of the season, or, like, you know, he has, like, his last 12 games, and he's averaging, like, 24 on, you know, like, solid efficiency, and he has, like, two big dunks, I mean, it's pretty easy to see the media getting behind that recency bias-wise.
Exactly. Yep. All right. Question from Ninja Narwhals. Do you prioritize taking a big in the draft, or do you go best overall on the board, regardless of position? Tim?
No, I'm a big supporter of just going best overall. Even though I will admit going into this draft, I always kind of get, you know, blinded in that time all year. I'm like, obviously you just go best available. And then I saw James Wiseman. I was tantalized. I was like, oh my God, we should take him. But, you know, think about it like this. So if you're drafting a big in the top 10, you know, you're kind of assuming that if they produce whatsoever, that they're going to get the max extension. It's pretty hard to talk any of those guys into anything, you know, like less than at least like 75% of the max. That's where, you know, Marvin Bagley is going to get in trouble. DeAndre Ayton, like, as good as, like, you know, like, and DeAndre Ayton, I think, is pretty good, but you don't want to pay him, you know, more than $15 million a year. You look at all the contracts that bigs have in the league today, how many are, like, actually, like, you know, positive contracts at, like, over $10 million? It's, you know, studs like Jokic, Embiid, Gobert, even Turner, like Miles Turner is like a very good player, and his contract was viewed as a negative. It's, you know, it's just a dicey thing. When you're drafting a guy, you're not thinking about this team. You have to think 3 years down the road. Where are you? You know, was it worth it?
Yeah, I'm with you. And I'm glad. I think we said this, like we've said this throughout our podcast, that you just go best overall. Like you can't think about fit at all with this team. Like, you know, just because we have some good guards right now, like you said, like 3 years down the road, we don't really know what our team will look like. So with that being said, if we have the number one overall pick, are you taking Cade Cunningham or
Evan Mobley? No, I'm taking Cade Cunningham. I'm like, you don't even think twice. Where would the Kings be right now? Do you think the Kings are like, whew, man, I'm happy we don't have Luka Doncic. That guy would really hurt De'Aaron Fox. Like, oh man, the Suns would be so much better off if they did this. It's like, nah, man, you know, you just take, you take the best prospect and you figure it out. Because what ends up happening is most of these players don't pan out in such a way. As good as, you know, even like LaMelo, like LaMelo is great, but it's like you always want more ball handling, you always want more shooting. If it's a wing, if we get like, you know, let's say like the 15th pick and there's a guy that is the exact, you know, same build as Miles Bridges, you take that guy. I mean, because he might not work out, Miles might not work out in the same way. You get a trade asset. It's like, you know, a couple of years ago Minnesota was in this bind where it's like, oh, you know, we have Andrew Wiggins, we have Josh Okogie, we just drafted Jared Culver. Like, you know, what are we going to do? And it's like, all those guys fucking suck. You just, you know, you just want to get the highest, not even necessarily highest upside, but yeah, a guy that can fit with your team, grow with your team. And, you know, as long as he's not going to directly impede, you know, one of your like best prospects development, you just, yeah, you think 3 years from now, not next season.
Yep. I'm completely with you. Cade to the Hornets somehow. I hope it happens.
Yeah, Cade. In other words, and also we should bring up that, you know, bigs, like look at OKC. Moses Brown just came in. Never heard of the dude. And he's been averaging like 15 and 15 the last, you know, 3 weeks. Granted, you know, raw numbers are not always the best way to go about things. But you look, Rudy Gobert was the 27th pick. Miles Turner, I think, what was he, the 11th overall pick. Nikola Vucevic, great guy, like the 28th pick. Jokic, second rounder. Like there are just bigs. Clint Capella, like 24th pick in the draft. There's all these guys where, you know, you just get them later on. You get a flyer here and there. The, you know, like the replacement level for a big is just, you know, so high compared to like, you know, a guard. You just, you know, unless it's like an Evan Mobley type, you at least think about because he's so skilled. But I mean, you really have to hit upper 90th percentile big to make that second contract worth it.
Word. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And Evan Mobley, also, I want to point out that like a lot of people are pretty high on him. I don't quite see it. Like, I don't understand why he's like that sick. But anyways,
you're wild.
You agreed with me on this take earlier this year.
Hey man, I was a different man back then. I've seen more Evan Mobley. I mean, I kind of detest college basketball, but a lot of people that I trust scouting wise really like him. And you know, I watched like a 5 minute clip, so it's not like I'm like sitting there breaking down game tape. That dude is skilled. He is an insane leaper. He's got good wingspan. Like, I mean, I think he's significantly better than Wiseman. And I mean, I was just wrong about Wiseman so far. So I mean, I'm no expert. That's just one man's take.
All right. Question from Typical Leaf. Power rank your five favorite Hornets players. I'll go first. First, I'm going to have to go with Caleb Martin. Just kidding. I'm going to go with LaMelo Ball, Terry Rozier second, Devontae Graham, and then Miles Bridges, Malik Monk. Those are my five favorite Hornets players. Yes, our four guards are included in there. I really just went with my heart, dude. I love Devontae. I also love Miles, even though he has flaws that we've pointed out before on the podcast. I just like love watching him play. And Malik Monk is my fifth favorite player.
I guess I can let that slide. And yeah, Typical Leaf, he asks like, you know, who are your five favorite Hornets player? Like, these aren't who we think are the best Hornet players, the best prospects. Just, you know, you just got to follow your heart on this one and go with what it calls. So obviously, number one, Malik Monk. You know, love watching him play. I have too much riding on Malik Monk being good as well. And he's a big 1975 fan. I've recently kind of come around on the weekend more, so I think that tattoo is sick. I love Malik. I just root for him. Number two, LaMelo. I mean, obviously you just watch him play, he'd probably be number one, but I'm too much of a hipster. You know, there's too many people clawing for LaMelo's attention. Don't want to get him too hyped. Number three, Terry Rozier. I mean, the way that he plays, the confidence of that dude, you know how confident you have to be to have one good playoff run and then Kyrie comes back and he's like, where the fuck does this dude think he's the best player? Like, did he see what I did to Eric Bledsoe? I love that shit. And he has one of the best tweets of all time about Osama bin Laden. Check it out. Devontae Graham be a number four. He's from North Carolina, a Raleigh guy. He's a short king. He's got huge balls. And I love watching him play. I'm a big fan. Like, you know, that Suns game, perfect example. You know, when he gets hot, you know, he is just so electric. And number five, this is a... it's a hot take, but my favorite possible Stockholm syndrome here, Bismack Biyombo, man.
It's not
just play style though. You know, maybe I've just been around him too long. I feel like, you know, he's one of those dudes who, like, you know, is a friend of a friend and you fucking hate him the first time you meet him. And then after like 3 years, you're kind of like, damn, you know, I gotta, like, where's Greg, man? So that's, I saw a picture of Bismack hanging out with his brothers and they all look pretty similar and they were all smiling. And I was like, ah, I don't know, man. He's won me over. And, you know, honestly, I just, I'd be lying. Like, I didn't even consider Gordy, didn't consider Miles and didn't consider PJ.
Yeah, I don't know why I don't consider PJ. I just think he's like maybe not that fun to watch compared to these other dudes. But Bismack in your top five is a wild selection. That gets us into the next question. Why is Biz still here? We don't know. We don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure why he's still playing on our team. Again, JB, if you're out there listening, you know, keep this in mind for next game. Let's see if you can limit Bismack's minutes.
Yeah, I mean, him and Zeller should probably flip minutes if we're being realistic. You got to respect Bismack for playing a total of like 43 minutes in the last two games and getting up a combined four shots.
That's wild. All right. Question from Instagram. Ian asks, why does the NBA have a trade deadline? And when did that become a thing? Thought this was actually an interesting question historically. Tim, you got the answer for us.
Yeah, the NBA trade deadline has been around pretty much as long as the NBA has been around. It's been altered a couple times, you know, moved here and there and changed like the time of day when, you know, it used to be like a 9 o'clock thing, but you know, they moved to 3 o'clock. And really what it comes down to, if you think about it, you know, a team gets, you know, half a season to evaluate where their roster is. And so that gives them, you know, 40 games to work with that. They see what they need, you know, other teams get to feel around. And, you know, then that gives them, you know, another half of the season to actually get the team, you know, ready and, like, you know, chemistry good as well. And, you know, it kind of makes sense if you think about it. If there was just no trade deadline, it's like there wouldn't necessarily be the pressure to force trades. And I mean, there is a reason why, you know, all these trades happen at, you know, 250, because it's like, you know, it does force all these teams to take a hard look and decide what they need to do. And it changes compensation as well. If you were able to trade Bradley Beal 70 games into a season as opposed to, you know, 40 games, then, you know, you don't, maybe it's a top three protected pick instead of just an unprotected pick. All that stuff goes into it. And you don't want a team that maybe their best player gets hurt with 15 games and, you know, like left in the year, and then they just have a fire sale and, you know, teams are unequipped because they made their deals, you know, a month earlier.
Interesting, interesting background. All right. Question from Ryan, and no offense, Ryan, but this is a, also in contention for delusional Hornets take of the week. He asks, does Miles have a chance at the sixth man of the year award? The answer, Ryan, is no.
No, it is. It's no. It's just a, it's a big no. And part of it has to do with guys like Miles just don't win sixth man of the year. It normally goes to, you know, just like scoring guards has kind of been the norm the last, you know, like 10, 15 years. Like Andre Iguodala probably should have won, you know, one or two sixth man of the years during those runs. It just doesn't happen. And, you know, let's talk about Miles' game against the Suns real quick. Because he was electric. He was fucking fantastic. He was like 18 and 12. You know, he had three massive dunks. Maybe probably my favorite Miles dunk of his career, that alley-oop.
From a Martin, too.
My boys. But it just makes it so, like, it exacerbates my fucking annoyance with him. Because, like, I don't expect this every night. But it's just like, man, and it wasn't like skill players. It wasn't like he was hot from three. He was just getting down the court. He was jamming the ball, you know, just cramming it down the defense. And it's like, why you can't do this 3 out of 5 games?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel that. And like recently he had been just like incredibly passive, and like him and PJ just kind of switched roles in that game. Like PJ just had a shit game, scored 0 points in like 43 minutes. And then Miles pops off. And it's like every time we talk bad about Miles, he plays well. Every time we talk good about PJ, he plays poorly. Like it's like these both of those two dudes are like pretty inconsistent, bro. Like both of them are on are either hot or cold. And yeah, it is frustrating to watch. Obviously, they're both still young. You know, you got to keep that in mind. Miles is third year and PJ's second year. So we got to give him a little bit more time before like judging him too hard. But yeah, Miles's passivity like throughout the season can be very, very annoying, especially when LaMelo's out. Like we need him to step it up a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, man, you watch that Suns game. You're like, man, I would give this guy the max right now. Like, you know, as far as like the like rookie extension maxes go. And then you watch him 3 straight games where he, you know, doesn't reach double digits and kind of sleepwalks through offense and defense.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, man. Like, what can we possibly do to get this guy more often?
Mm. All right, dude. Last question. What is your favorite Hornets jersey of all time?
You know, actually, I don't have one for this.
Okay. Mine was an easy answer. The LaMelo Ball mint jersey that I'm currently wearing and I've been wearing for the past week, Tim. I'm also growing out my mustache. I got a similar haircut. I trimmed down the sides a little bit, left the top a little bit longer. I'm going to be looking just like him here in a couple weeks. Give me a little bit of time to slim down, drop like 30 pounds real quick.
Yeah. And you know, anyone that's ever played basketball with Mark knows he is the polar opposite of LaMelo Ball. He never passes the fucking ball. A notorious gunner.
Hey, LaMelo likes to get up his shots too.
This is from George, and it's a thoughts on PJ putting up a stinker with Tiana Trump in attendance yesterday. Hot question by George. For those who are uninitiated, Tiana Trump is a very famous adult entertainment star. And, you know, I was like, you know what? I'll blame it on the injury. Maybe he just had a cold game. Maybe he was just mirroring Jay Crowder going 0-9 from 3 in 33 minutes. But, you know what? Donald Trump showed up to my work. I'm probably dropping towels. I'm washing cars. I'm probably fucking up too. I can't hate on the man too much. And we should say, you know, was a bad scoring game from him, but he did have 2 steals, two blocks, and he was a positive in a game that we lost as well. You know, a positive plus minus, obviously single game plus minus is nothing to live or die from, but worth noting.
Yeah.
Also, one weird stat from that Suns game, Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham were 11 of 28 from 3 yesterday, which is just crazy volume. The rest of our team was 2 for 15.
That's wild. That's wild.
Yeah, pretty ugly there.
Wizards on Tuesday night, and then the Nets on Thursday night on TNT. We're going to have Charles Barkley and Shaq and Kenny talking about the Hornets. I'm sure they scheduled this game before the LaMelo Ball injury. KD also not going to be playing. So kind of a rough look for TNT, but it'll be fun as Hornets fans. It's not every day we get a TNT game. So Tim and I will be recording right after the next Nets game on Thursday night. Look for that episode to drop after the game late on Thursday. Big shout out to everybody who supports us on Patreon. As we mentioned earlier in the show, we had our first ever Patreon Zoom watch party. And shout out to everybody who showed up to that. We had 4 Patreon supporters show up. That was fun. But shout out to Tim Rogers, Xavier Harvin, TC Cunningham, Isaac Black, Brandon Garcia, Austin Johnson, Rob McMillan, Evan Georges, Caitlin Ferland, and Jack Anderson for the support. The link is in the show notes. You can get a shout out at the end of every episode for just $3.
Yeah, and also want to give a big shout out to TC, who looked me dead in my eyes during that game and said, "What's the difference between Malik Monk's first 3 years and Ben McLemore's?" Shit hurt.
Also, be sure to leave us a review, rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. If you do that, we will give you a shout out at the end of an episode.
All right, Mark, this is a good time, man. Be safe out there.
All right, bro. Peace.
Peace.
Back to the Tiana Trump thing. Had never heard of her until we got this tweet, but yeah.
I've watched her entire filmography and I'm a fan.
Yeah, I wonder what she was doing in Charlotte, bro. I looked up, I did some Google searching, and I was like, what is this person doing watching Hornets games?
Were you searching on private?
This feels like a blooper. All right.